Episode 42 with Sandy Haskin.
Where meditation meets daily life, this is the Meditation Freedom Podcast.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Meditation Freedom Podcast. My name is Seiko Rhode. Today, I have a good friend of ours who practices Zen meditation, and she's been doing it since the 1980s, and she talks a little bit about her journey and some of the things she's learned about meditation, how to keep a practice going. And I think it might be helpful to those of you listening who just want to learn what it's like from another person's perspective. So Sandy practices Zen meditation with the Three Treasure Sangha of the Northwest, which is what I'm part of as well. And she currently lives and works in Spokane, Washington. In Spokane, she works as a nurse aide at a home for mentally ill adults. And she also sells books, DVDs, and CDs on Amazon with her sister. She's got a lot of experience coming from 12-step programs, so she talks a little bit about that as well. And if you were expecting an interview with the OMG, I Can Meditate, that got put on hold. We had a couple of issues last week, and then we also had some technical issues when we did our last recording, so we have to re-record it. And hopefully that'll be up in a week or two. For this week, we've got Sandy Haskin, and I hope you enjoy this interview. Here's Sandy Haskin. Well, thank you so much, Sandy, for being willing to be interviewed on this podcast.
You're welcome.
And so you've been doing it for quite a few years. Maybe you can go into a little bit before you even started meditation and a Zen practice. What was that like? What was your life like? And what kind of struggles did you have, you know, that made you become aware that you needed to go into a direction of meditation practice?
Well, I remember very specifically how I began to meditate and when, because I just left the town I grew up in, Spokane, Washington, and moved to Olympia, and found out that because of some of my family history that I could get some help from being a 12-step program. So I joined ACOA and began to work the 12 steps, and that was in the summer of 1986. Mm-hmm. And I think I was ripe then because I thought moving would take care of my problems and my dissatisfaction with myself and my life. And what I had done is move to Olympia and create yet another dysfunctional relationship like I had had in Spokane. So I was kind of disappointed about where my life was headed at that point.
And you mean by relationship, you mean with another man?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. An adult relationship. Yeah. Yeah. And so I was totally confounded about what I needed to do to make my life work. And I read a book called Women Who Love Too Much from Robin Norwood. And she said, if there's any alcoholism in your family, look up a 12-step group. And I said, well, I qualify. So, I mean, it was just an afterthought. It was, you know, the last chapter in the book or something. So I went to ACOA and I found my home. I found my home. So anyway, that's a long answer. The short question is, why do you meditate? The 12 steps is all about finding a spiritual answer to your life for your problems. It was not an option. It is not an option. That's the whole basis of the 12-step program. And yet they don't tell you what it's going to look like or what religion or anything, but that's your job to work out in a 12-step program. So I began meditating alone at home, watching a candle flame. I don't know where I got that, but that's what I did, was watch a candle flame. And I happened to have a friend in the ACOA program named Pamela Lee, and I told her I was meditating at home, and she goes, well, I meditate, you know, come on up to Seattle with me. We'll go sit on a Saturday afternoon. I said, really? A real person? So I began sitting with a group, and that was fundamental for me to start a practice, was to be connected with a group and a schedule and a teacher and a community. So that was back in late 86, and I've been meditating basically 25 years. I was off for about five, but I've kept it since then.
Yeah. In that Alcoholics Anonymous program, was the meditation part of that, or it's just like they say, find a spiritual component on your own, and that's how you ended up with the candle meditation?
Well, I don't think I called myself an alcoholic, but you can. I called myself an ACOA. But yes, I was in Alcoholics Anonymous also. I was in actually four different 12-step programs. But the second step is came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And the 11th step is sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God as I understood God, praying only for knowledge of God's will for me to carry that out. So yes, prayer and meditation are very, very basic. I made them basic to my program anyway.
But it's not necessarily for anybody.
No, it's not necessarily. Yeah. It's not necessarily. It's part of a path you could learn. Other people go to church and don't meditate. Mm-hmm. Some people do go to church and meditate. Other people, you got to find your own way. That's what it's about, finding your own spiritual path.
Right. And you said you were in four different 12-step programs?
Or? I was. I am quite an addict. I'm flaming. In fact, I was ordered to go. I wanted to stay in ACOA my whole life. My best friends were there. I had, it was just so much fun. And I was going to treatment for my alcoholism, which I loved. I love going to treatment. I love the attention to myself. And the counselor said, when we're finished with this treatment, you will go to AA. And I said, I will not go to AA. I'm already in a 12-step group, and I love it, and I'm getting it, okay?
Yeah, so it applies to...
It applies. Yeah, and he said, well, if you're not going to go, don't come back here and finish your treatment. And I said, okay, I'll go. Anyway, yeah, I started out in one group and ended up in quite a few others.
Yeah. And so then as you got into this meditation group, what kind of meditation group did you go into?
My friend Pamela Lee was involved in Three Treasures Sangha, which is a Zen meditation group. They're under the umbrella of Diamond Sangha and Robert Aiken from Hawaii. And she had sat extensively with his different groups throughout the Pacific Northwest. So that's the basis of where I started meditating, was the Three Treasures group in Seattle, Washington. And I've been with them ever since. So.
Yeah, great. And what did you like, what do you find in particular to be very helpful about a Zen group like the Three Treasures Sangha?
What is particularly helpful? I guess the focus is totally on meditation, and it's not on what you do or don't believe. It's not in fact, the people that introduced me to it and taught me to meditate are Catholic, and they don't even want to be called Buddhists. So the focus is on the practice, doing the practice yourself and committing to it. And they're good people. They're just real good people. And I liked what I saw in these people. They were adults my age. I was in my 30s then. I seemed to really settle into just meditating. There wasn't a lot of chanting. There wasn't a lot of read this, follow this person. There wasn't any of that asked. It was... learn the meditation, and when our teacher's in town, we'll listen to the teacher and get some direction. But it wasn't like I was used to going to church where there were sermons. And it wasn't that way. So I like the approach of the focus being on meditation. So it fit my personality.
Right. And were there certain insights along the way, maybe early on, that made you realize you wanted to keep coming back to it because it was helping you? You know, because some people, they start a meditation practice, actually that happens a lot, and then they lose the they lose the motivation to keep going back to it over and over. Did you ever have those types of times where you had like a period where it wasn't so easy and you had to be motivated to go back to sitting and practice?
Well, yeah, one thing about meditation that is hard, I think, for our culture is I don't believe there's instant results.
Mm-hmm.
There are very, very subtle results. And to me, the subtle results were that my personality started to calm down. And I think when you look at me from the outside, you wouldn't guess that I had a lot of anxiety, but I did. And I was tongue-tied and I was very, 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 very self-conscious and worried about things, whatever I would say, blah, blah, blah. And meditation just seemed to calm things down. But it took a long, long time. And I remember, I have a strange story, but it's true. It's, you know, my life is what it is, okay? But, I was sober. I was sober and looking for God, looking for a program for a couple of years, and I wasn't getting it. You know, like, where is God or the Spirit, whatever. I was miserable. I was miserable. You know, when you're going to meetings and retreats and jamborees with all these people that seem so happy, and I wasn't very happy. So I was asking God for a sign, because I was just like, there's nothing happening. There's nothing here.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing there. I don't get it. I don't get it at all. Maybe I need this, you know, some people don't need to get what I got, but, so I prayed to God and asked for a sign. I know you're not supposed to ask for that kind of stuff, but, I did because I was desperate. And, I was up in the middle of the night because I was a year or like a year and a half sober and I was miserable and I hadn't drank in that time. And I religiously worked the steps. And I was on the toilet crying, like in the middle of the morning. You know, sometimes you have those nights.
Mm-hmm.
You just have them. And I was up in the middle of the night. So I actually, about a half hour after that, I started to smell smoke. I lived in an apartment. And I opened the door, and there was smoke coming down the hallway. And so I looked around, and one of my neighbor's apartments was on fire.
Wow.
So I ran to the managers, and we ran to get everybody out of the place. And I went back to my apartment, locked the door, and then we worked on getting everybody out, all that type of stuff. And it was a mess. My place was a mess because I had locked the door. They had to smash down the door to make sure I wasn't still in there. So if you ever get in a fire, don't lock your door.
Right.
I'm serious. The policeman will destroy it to make sure you're not in there. So anyway, I was at a friend's house sleeping that night. And I was just thinking about everything that had happened that evening. And then I realized that the day before that fire had happened, I used to do the Mother Peace Tarot, which is a card spread. And like the day before the fire, I had gotten this card of a person a woman sitting in meditation, and she was surrounded by flames. You know, and Mother Peace Tarot, oh, I know, it's new age, it's weird, it's whatever, but the moment that I remembered getting that card, I felt the presence of God. I felt, I just felt a peace about my life, that this was supposed to happen to me. I don't know why, I don't understand, but I gained something through understanding that in spiritual terms, this was the way my life was supposed to go. And my friends kept saying, aren't you going to cry? I mean, your stuff is trashed. Mm. And I'd say, wow, you know, I know it's tough, but anyway, I gained a tremendous amount of peace. So that, and other things, I realized that I believe that when we sincerely want answers and when we sincerely seek, that we do get answers and we do, find, guidance.
Right.
Spiritual path, even though it may not be what we expect it to be. So, yeah, I've had ups and downs, but I think it's just something you have to follow through. Anyone on any spiritual path is going to find it's not going to be easy. But the alternative, I don't want to go back to how I used to feel. That's my alternative. I don't want to go back to my old life. It was pretty ugly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great story.
Well, I didn't plan on telling you, but you asked something. So anyway, yeah. So, you get your answers along the way if you, I guess, ask in all sincerity. So,
and so you've done it a long time. So you know that's. Yeah, I'm sure you've had more moments in addition to that amazing story.
Yes, I have. Yeah.
And it just continues to unfold.
Yeah. You know, in the Zen tradition, it's liked by some people because it's not really heavily promoted that you believe the ancestors or that you memorize books or whatever. But the longer and longer I meditate, the more I see the world the way they see the world, and that is, it's very, very, very satisfying. It's very, very satisfying. And I know that's because of my meditation, and it's not because of my intellect, because they're talking about a spiritual plane, and it's not something you can intellectualize.
Mm-hmm.
So, it just becomes much very, very satisfying for one's life. Yes, and I've had some whoppers of experiences too that help one keep going. And I think what I would like to mention also is that I think human beings, human contact, having a teacher are so important to a meditation practice. If I would have not met that woman, Pamela Lee, who actually meditated, it would have just been on my list. Oh yes, sometime I'll meditate. But I had a contact, so it started all kinds of things rolling. And to be in a group that has a schedule and needs your help, mm-hmm. Volunteer, you do service work, you get involved. It's crucial because I'm self-centered. I want to just live my own life, and I want to be left alone still.
Right.
You know, so I think involvement in a group is crucial for the long haul of sticking to it, sticking to meditation.
Yeah. And at some point, I'm sure you didn't do that right from the start. You started also attending retreats, and maybe you can highlight some of the the benefits of going to a retreat as well as going to a regular weekly gathering.
Yeah, well, early in my meditation practice, I did attend two sessions a year, which is a 7-day retreat. And that really solidified me in practice. And the experiences in Sesshin are that one is very, very much supported in turning around your attention to look inwards and to do your practice. And there's really, it's really rare to have that kind of opportunity in our culture.
Right.
Because even if we're home alone, we feel compelled to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to have some place to go where you have permission and actually it's set up for you to not be thinking or writing or talking or planning is tremendously helpful. So I started the first year I was meditating, going to Sesshin, and that fixed me into the practice. When you're in retreat, you're with the same people, eating, sleeping, snoring, sitting for 24 hours a day for 7 days. And it's easy to get a little upset at what people are doing or critical or judgmental. And I find that going on retreat with other people really opens a person up to accepting other people and being able to accept or help them in their practice. And I'm usually can be very judgmental about others, but when you're on retreat, you communicate on a level that's not intellectual and it's not verbal.
Mm-hmm.
So you almost get to experience, I hate to use the word because it's kind of squishy, but love.
Mm-hmm.
You just experience a unity and a co-traveler type thing with all of these people. And maybe half of them you've never met before. So it's an experience that speaks for itself, just having, valuing the quiet time and doing that with a group of people. You know, and so what was your question? What are experiences that I've had?
Yeah, maybe you have an example of a retreat that you remember fondly, or maybe there was something that just stood out on a particular retreat that you had.
Okay, well, I've been over to Mountain Lamp a couple times the last couple of years. That's a retreat center in Deming, Washington, where my teacher, Jack Duffy, and his partner, Eileen Kiera, have a retreat center. So I've been over there to Sesshin's the last couple of years. I was there a couple of years ago, and the weather there is totally chaotic. It can be snowing, raining, sunshine, hailing all in one day. So we're sitting in the Zen Center, and it's storming. It's storming around us, as it does. It's up in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very stormy. And of course, you're warm. You're sitting in the Zendo on your cushion, and you've got lots of blankets on, so it's cool. And I believe I was like 5 days into meditation at this time. We go for 7. So it was like on the 5th day, and towards the end of the evening, you know, I'd been listening to the storm, letting it flow in and out of me. And after a while, I realized that I was no longer sitting there on the cushion in my body. I was raining. I was raining. That's just the reality. I was raining. I was no longer a person. I was rain. So I don't know if that's what you're asking
Yeah,
for,
that's
but
great.
it was fabulous. I mean, I don't even know what it means, but
you're talking about the boundaries that we normally that we're so trained to think of ourselves. You know, it ends with our skin.
Right.
That's what was break or loosening up or dissolving is the way I look at it. You know,
And we don't meditate to get like quote experiences, but certain experiences come along, and when they do, you know that you're settled. Also, you know that you're really settled, and that was wonderful just to.
Yeah, and I think it's good for people to see what's possible at retreats, and sometimes just, you know, reading about it isn't enough. You know, it's nice to hear an example of what can happen during a retreat.
Right, and also just to add to the general thing is I'm always surprised, and I've done retreats forever, I'm always surprised when I recognize how much energy we take to like do social greetings, to smile at people, to always have the right composure, whatever. All of that takes energy. And when you're in a group that the focus is taken care of so you can turn inward, That's a huge freedom, and it's very, very difficult to do alone. It is very difficult to do alone. And when you meditate with a group, there's a power. There's a power greater, I don't mean a God, greater than yourself, but there's a strength.
Right.
That would be the better word for it. There's a strength to keep going because everybody else is. So you can do more with a group than you can do alone. It's just what I found to be true.
Yeah. Yeah. Same with me.
Yeah. 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 You've done many yourself, and it turns into a way of life, which is so wonderful. I mean, I set my life up more now on retreats than I do vacations. It's like, okay, this year, how many retreats am I going to do? What, you know, where's the money? What, I don't set it up around vacations, although I take vacations too, but it's a lifelong practice. It's just a lifelong practice, and it's very, very wonderful to have as I grow older.
Yeah. And then when you come out of retreat, how do you get the sense that you want to integrate some of the things that you were practicing in retreat, you know, and mingle that in the rest of your life? How do you go about that?
Well, I think being in retreat, one becomes rather naive, and you're feeling a certain way, and you're in a certain zone of vulnerability, and I tend to fall for it every time and think that this is going to last forever. But it doesn't. So, I guess what I take with me is I try to reintegrate slowly, like have a peaceful day the day after a retreat. And I recognize how wonderfully that my judging people stops, you know, that I can appreciate the work of everyone who's been there to make it happen. So those are the things I take into my life, hopefully, is the ability to watch my mind and to lessen the judgments of others, because it's just a habitual way to separate. It's not even true, you know, the stuff you say. It's all about my own ego having one up over yours, you know. So when I come out of retreat, that sense of peace, of course, is there for a while, but I can't keep it for a long time. But I think of it later and think of, let that person alone. Don't hassle him in my own head. I don't have to go back there. So, yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's a gift. It's a gift to have a practice.
What would you say to someone who is currently struggling with starting or keeping a meditation practice on how to deal with that, these obstacles to their meditation practice? Do you have any suggestions for someone like that?
Well, one thing I had looked up, and I strongly suggest people to get together with a group. There's a website called BuddhaNet, and if people are trying to sit alone, I think that is one way to backslide. I think that's very, very difficult. Anyway, there's a site called BuddhaNet, and you can look up your state and find groups nearby you, and you would be amazed how many groups there are in the United States. Laramie, Wyoming has a group. There's 82 groups in Washington State. There's 32 in Seattle alone. So anyway, my first idea is don't sit alone.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that, but connect with other people and talk about your practice.
Yeah, or at least go once in a while.
Yes.
You know, besides sitting alone on a day-to-day basis, go every so often to a group.
Right,
yeah,
right.
I agree.
Yeah, yeah. And talk things out. Talk things out with people about how it's going. I think the motivation I've had is just that I was miserable, emotionally miserable. So the more miserable you are, the more you may want to seek out, you know, a spiritual path.
Right.
And but it is very difficult because it may not be obvious that you're growing or that you're getting it. And I think that's just the way it goes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like a crock pot, you know, it's just slowly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cooking.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. But in the end, it's worth it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Well, it's been so wonderful to chat with you. And thank you so much for being willing to do this.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I talked more than I thought I would. So, and so do you, Seiko.
Yeah.
When you're on computer.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, you do. Funny. Yeah, I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome. It's been very good. And it's good to reflect back. That is also one of the 12 steps. Tate made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves.
Yeah.
Which is something I learned. And it's good to look back and look at why you are where you are. So,
yeah.
I certainly don't owe it to myself. I owe it to AA 12-step groups. Get a God. Get a God. I don't care if it's a doorknob. Just get a God. As long as it's not you.
Yeah.
Yep. I guess that's all I have to say.
That's great. That's perfect. I hope you enjoyed this interview with Sandy. I know I did. And you can find out more about Sandy's particular meditation group by going to the show notes for this particular episode, meditationfreedom.com/42. If you would like to provide feedback on either the show or a particular episode or just on the podcast in general, you can do so by going to meditationfreedom.com/survey. Thanks so much, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. Take care.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Meditation Freedom Podcast, where meditation meets daily life.